Welcome to the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell, ESPN. We're back. I'm in Washington, D.C. I'm no longer in Atlanta. My guest is no longer in Atlanta. It is Monday, February 4th, 2019. The 2018 NFL season has concluded. And oh, what a conclusion. It came to 16 points. If you had under 16 and a half for the Super Bowl, well, guess what? You are listening to this game from a small island you just purchased because your under 16 and a half came in. Patriots 13, Rams 3, a interesting game in a lot of ways to me. I want to hear what our guest thinks about how things went down. Joining us, making his contractually obligated monthly appearance on the Bill Barnwell Show, is CBS's Will Brinson. Will, I'm going to start with this. Was that a fun game last night?
I don't know, Bill. Yes, I think, look, it was a Super Bowl. It was, here's the thing. As I understand it, the ratings were probably down a little bit. I haven't seen the actual numbers. That's not me confirming it as a CBS employee or anything. But I would have to anticipate that a low-scoring defensive battle is just going to do less numbers in a high-scoring offensive matchup. And I think that we talked about this earlier in the year after the Rams and Chiefs game, I believe. But to me, each football game is unique in its own way. Now, every football game doesn't have to be fun. And every Super Bowl doesn't have to be fun. But if a Super Bowl is close and a Super Bowl is a battle between two defensive teams who are, you know, in a way, I would say, I wouldn't call it Floyd Mayweather-ish. It was sort of like two boxers who were not going back and forth and were not going to allow the other boxer to deliver a knockout blow by making a mistake and being too aggressive. And so in that respect, yeah, it was a good game, and it's a fascinating cap on a season where so many think pieces, probably by both of us, were written about the changing of the guard, offense is here, bright young minds, a fresh crop of quarterbacks, new schemes, college systems. It's like, oh, and by the way, Bill Belichick and Wade Phillips are really good at what they do still. And that was sort of the takeaway, along with, as I wrote for CBS Sports, that I managed to jam I was delirious as I was writing it, but I managed to jam a True Detective, Time is a Flat Circle, and a Great Gatsby, Boats Born Ceaselessly Against the Past reference into one column, which I should be shot to the moon for doing it, but I don't care. It felt like the Patriots reinvented 2001. I mean, that's what that was. Bill Belichick is going to pull out every stop in the book with this unnamed, this no-name defense that the people don't really respect enough to upend a great offensive Rams team with a quarterback, I think, in his third year as a starter. Mm-hmm. I think Warner was in that same spot. And really just, it came down to the greatness of Belichick and his ability to adapt on a macro and micro level in game-to-game situations. And, Sean McVay said it best, I got out-coached.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really interesting you brought up the no-name element of this, because, of course, you've heard Tom Brady all year, not all year, but over the past 2 weeks at the very least, say, nobody believes in us, everyone thinks we suck, blah, 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 blah. Obviously, I think a lot of us have faith in Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, and nobody is doubting those two in any means. But given what we saw from the Patriots in last year's Super Bowl, were we sleeping on this sort of defensive performance happening?
Yes, 100%. I mean, the Patriots were not some dominant defense for much of the season. They haven't really, had a pass rush. They ranked 16th in DVOA.
Right around average.
Yeah, right around average. And, they weren't great again. They weren't great at any one thing. I mean, Stephon Gilmore maybe had a fantastic season. Sure. Jason McCourty and Devin McCourty played well together, and Jason McCourty was great down the stretch. Of course, he points out he went from 0-16 to a Super Bowl champion. How often does that happen? By the way, Brandon Cooks lost a Super Bowl on back-to-back years on different teams. That didn't happen often either. I don't think we thought that this was possible because of what we had really seen from the Patriots throughout the year and the understanding after the game against the second half against New Orleans and the game against Dallas, two good defenses, that the Rams went up against sort of led us to believe that even if Belichick is a mastermind at crafting defense, that it would be very difficult to stop the Rams offense, not necessarily because of Jared Goff's ability or experience, but because of Sean McVay's personnel, or because of the personnel available and because of Sean McVay's creativity. And at the end of the day, the Patriots, particularly on the defensive line, outplayed the Rams offensive line. And Sean McVay was shockingly uncreative. Like he showed a shocking amount of a lack of creativity in terms of how he approached this game plan.
Yeah. I mean, the way I would describe this game is I wouldn't say it was exciting because it was not exciting. It was quite dull for stretches, but it was always tense because, for the vast majority of this game, you kind of figured, okay, the Rams are one big play or one drive or one couple of shots downfield, one long pass interference call, one big Gurley or Anderson run away from being basically in position to tie the game. And that play never came. I mean, you figure the one real shot they had was on the blown coverage by the Patriots against that Yankee concept with the seam route from Brandon Cooks, or I guess it's actually a post route from Brandon Cooks, and it's a Yankee concept, but post route from Brandon Cooks that got knocked away at the last moment by Jason McCourty, who you mentioned, like you said, someone to the Patriots, traded a seventh round pick and got a sixth round pick, or they traded a six for McCourty and a seven, I should say. But I mean, not a guy who anybody was really valuing at a high level, since the Browns were about to cut him, and a guy who made the biggest play in for the one chance the Rams had to win a Super Bowl. And I guess the part that surprises me about the situation is this. I wrote about this in my column before the game. I think other people mentioned this as well. The Lions had a good amount of success against the Rams earlier on in the season by switching from man coverage to quarters coverage. And to me, I didn't really get to that in my column because I kind of figured, okay, well, the Patriots will probably show a few quarters looks and a little bit of zone, but you figure McVay is prepared for that based on that Lions game, and so he's going to have some plays to beat some coverage and beat quarters, set up on early downs to try and dissuade the Patriots from doing that. And it never happened. Not only did it not happen at the beginning of the game, but as the game wore on and the Patriots were playing zone, McVay never really seemed to stumble upon an answer to sort of go against his tendencies and beat the Patriots or sort of make them pay for staying in zone, and sort of, run something that would represent a cover four beater. And I was pretty shocked. I mean, I really thought we were going to see that play, a drive happen during the game. And we saw, a couple of drives that came close, but there was no drive where it felt like, wow, these are the old Rams and they're suddenly like, we look like a team that we usually expect to see, moving up and down the field, I should say, just about anybody in football.
Yeah, I went down earlier today and looked at all the third downs that the Rams had too. Mm-hmm. So I think that was important. I mean, they couldn't get, they have 3 of 13 on third down and they couldn't get off the field. They couldn't stay on the field. And they needed to do that to wear down that Patriots front because the Patriots front was winning against their offensive line. And as a result, the victories that the Patriots front were getting allowed that zone coverage to force Jared Goff to read the entire field. And he wasn't ready to do it against Bill Belichick and that defense. And it is interesting, too, I think, that the Patriots have, and they lost Patrick Chung, of course, but the Patriots have invested heavily in the secondary. They have, Stephon Gilmore, who arguably, my colleague Ryan Wilson wrote this, and I know that Calais Campbell pointed out on Twitter, people's attention, but Stephon Gilmore easily could have been the MVP of that game. Julian Edelman, well deserving, and that's who I would have voted for if I had to vote. But I would have no problem if Stephon Gilmore won MVP of the Super Bowl because of how he played in that secondary. But Belichick has sort of seen he's ahead of the curve. He invested in the secondary, and in this particular instance, it gave him the personnel and the flexibility to say, all right, we're going to play zone on the back and we're going to, send Hightower and Kyle Van Noy and try and get pressure up the middle. And if we can slow these guys down on first and second down and Sean McVay does not change up what he does, run out of 11 personnel on first down and we can get them in favorable situations, then we can win. And the Rams average, their average depth, their average distance to go on third down in this game was 6.8 yards. I mean, that's a major problem. You're not going to win if you're in third and seven 13 times, and in all but two of those third down situations, the Rams went in out of shotgun. You know, it's a passing situation. The two they didn't go out of shotgun, a third and two where Goff was sacked for negative 14 yards, and then a third and 22 where they just, you know, conceded a punt and ran Todd Gurley for a single yard. So it was, for all that we talk about with McVay, the greatness of it, the greatness of his creativity and all that, it was ironically that he stuck to his tendencies and he just did exactly what Bill Belichick expected him to do, and Belichick just beat him. I mean, it's so simple and yet so surprising.
What did you think of McVay coming out after the game and basically saying that's what happened? Like, he got out coached. I mean, do you I admire it, but also like it's kind of sad in a way. You should have done better, I guess.
Yeah, I think it's good and honest, and that's how McVay strives to be in these, you know, like when I don't think he's trying to impress anybody when he rips off a depth chart. I think he's legitimately trying to be, hey, I'm an open book and I'm going to tell you what I feel and what we think we did and the mistakes we made. And I'm going to speak in fast paced football terminology to make it sound like I am saying lots of things in this robust discussion we're having. I mean, you know, it's sort of how he operates, but I do think you worry a little bit. Like, if you come out and say, I got owned by Bill Belichick, I think you're kind of conceding a concern that you, like, in the future, what happens when you play Bill Belichick again? Are you not, do you not turn into Todd Gurley and get the football yips or whatever it is?
I mean, did it change the way you view McVay? Like in the bigger picture? Like, do you think?
A little bit.
Really? Really? So there's is it a permanent thing for you, or just like, is it just a one misstep?
No, I mean, like, I still think he's a great young coach, but I do think that it shows you that as important as offense is, and look, Bill, look, no, I mean, it doesn't, like, I don't think less of Sean McVay. I do think, maybe this is a better way to put it. I think that the public perception of Sean McVay, which had sort of been treated as reality, is probably now closer to how I actually, like I think Sean McVay is what I view him as. I don't know if that makes sense, but like, he's treated as like, oh, he's like so aggressive, but he's not really aggressive.
Right.
And you know, he's treated as like this brilliant young offensive mind. And he is that. But he is, you know, it's not like he is always just outfoxed everybody. I mean, he destroyed Jason Garrett in that divisional round game. I get that. You know, he's aggressive with that fake punt against Sean Payton. And, I think that, in some cases it's more about, hey, I've got this personnel. I'm going to deploy it in this unusual way. I don't know that he has spent the entire 2 years of the Rams attack just outfoxing everybody. I think it's been a smart game plan that has worked very well and the team has executed on it. And so I think that maybe that requires a little bit of a step back. And isn't it fascinating that, now for the second year in a row, we've had a Super Bowl where someone or someones are hired from a certain coaching tree, and like the result of the Super Bowl makes you go, huh? Like Matt Patricia hired by the Lions last year, like, oh man, that's a bad last game to go out on. And now, you know, Zach Taylor, you're like, all right, good for you. You've got Sean McVay's protege. Good for you.
Poor Matt Patricia, like, helped win the Patriots a Super Bowl from Detroit and is not going to get a ring for it.
Yeah.
I had the same question for you in terms of Jared Goff, a quarterback who, I mean, he struggled for the majority of this game. He did make some throws. There were some really nice throws from Jared Goff, which isn't that surprising. He certainly made, you know, big plays in the past, but he was a little late to find Cooks when he was open on that play. He, you know, was inaccurate at stretches, took a couple sacks they'd rather him not take, took a couple of really hard hits on the sidelines when he maybe should have got the ball out to avoid taking a hit. And just seemed like he never really caught up. Like, it seemed like he never really adjusted and felt confident in the pocket versus Belichick, and had a couple of, you know, outside of those great sort of anticipation throws, wasn't really there. So, I mean, does it change the way you view Jared Goff's ceiling going forward?
No, and look, I should note that, like, I think Sean McVay is going to be great, and he is great. I think he's going to be a great head coach, and I think that he will grow with Jared Goff. And I'm not that worried about Jared Goff. I think you see the flashes. You saw him late. He started, all of a sudden, it was like he came alive like he did in that Saints game. And I need to go back and watch and see whether or not they were, you know, was it just because they were doing a hurry up and he sort of didn't have to think as much? You know, were they implementing some beaters with easier, you know, reads and all that? But I mean, he was whipping some throws. And so I think, Pete Prisco and I talked about this before in the week leading up to it, but it's Tom Brady didn't read the whole field, you know, with perfection for his entire career. I mean, he grew into that type of quarterback. And so I think that Jared Goff can grow there as well. Brian Burke, your colleague at ESPN, noted after the game, I believe, that Jared Goff this season had one interception against man coverage, 11 interceptions against zone coverage. That is probably a statistic that Bill Belichick had his hands on at some point in the 2 weeks leading up to the Super Bowl, would be my guess. And Goff, I was actually in the Patriots interview room afterwards, so I didn't hear this, but I got a chance to chat with your friend and my friend Robert Mays in the press box after the game, and Mays had seen Goff, and he basically said that he looked like he was bruised and beat up and battered and just sort of shell shocked. And I think that Sean McVay is probably in the same spot. And Goff talked to Mike Silver of NFL media and was honest and said, like, I blew this. And I don't think I worry too much about their long term success. I think they will be very good, but I do think that I certainly wouldn't. You know, I wouldn't say, all right, well, you know, the Rams are loaded for the long haul. I'm sure they'll be back in this spot. I mean, you know, Dan Marino never made it back in this spot, and he's Dan freaking Marino. So, I think you ding them a little bit, and you remember this, but you don't downplay the long haul expectations of it. And they just got taken down by, the best coach in the history of professional sports when it comes to Bill Belichick. And just got outmaneuvered in a way that that I think, you know, sort of belies the experience of both teams there.
All right, well, let's get to Todd Gurley's situation and the rest of this Rams-Patriots Super Bowl in a moment. But first, I want to talk about our friends at SeatGeek. And, guys, I have the offseason coming up. I'm really excited to travel a bit. I'm going to check out some games. I always do. I'm going to Vegas. I'm going to check out another Knights game. Really enjoyed the first experience I had. Very bizarre, but wildly entertaining. Great location on the Strip, and I got great seats because I used our partners at SeatGeek. Anytime I'm looking to buy tickets to a sporting event or a concert, even the theater, all kinds of stuff, anything that you need a ticket for, the first thing I do is get on my phone and load the SeatGeek app up and check and see what the prices are, because generally I'm going to get a better deal than I can get anywhere else, because SeatGeek is going all around the internet. They're using their deal score technology to rate the tickets, so you know you're getting a good deal. No matter what your budget is, no matter when you want to go, no matter where you want to go, SeatGeek can get you in with a fully guaranteed purchase. You can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. And best of all, if you're listening to the show, which I'm assuming you are if you're hearing this, you can get $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase by downloading the SeatGeek app and entering in promo code Barnwell today. That's promo code Barnwell, B-A-R-N-W-E-L-L. It's for $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase. So download the app. Go to checkout, enter in promo code Barnwell, get $10 back off that first SeatGeek purchase. SeatGeek, life's an event. We have the tickets. Now back to the show. Here's the thing I would say. I don't know that I totally agree with you on this one, and I've sort of brought this up a little bit earlier in this season. There is a reality here, I think, when it comes to Jared Goff, which is that when he lost Cooper Kupp, is it fair to say his numbers declined?
Oh, no, no doubt about it. And they declined precipitously and immediately, that Packers game.
And yeah, and then once they've saying lost Todd Gurley might be the wrong word, given that he's apparently going to go to his grave and the epitaph on his tombstone is going to say my knee is fine. But with Todd Gurley perhaps compromised or limited by his knee, it looks like he's also taken a step backwards as well. Is that fair to say?
By the way, I mean, all the buzz that is going around about Todd Gurley is that it is – that it's not his knee, that it's his head, which is, and I was trying to text with some friends of mine after the game and explain, they're like, what the hell happened to Gurley? I was like, everybody seems to think it's his head and that he has the football yips. They're like, what do you mean? Like, he can't like hit the hole? what are the football yips? I don't know. But I think it has to be some combination of knee and head. I don't know. It's the weirdest thing.
Yeah. I mean, something is clearly up, but what I'm saying is that, you know, you look at Goff and okay, well, he lost a good chunk of his numbers with Cooper Kupp missing. He wasn't the same player with Todd Gurley, not 100%. And every quarterback's going to lose something when they lose, you know, some of their weapons. But I would just, you know, I would just be a little anxious about the future. I wouldn't be saying you get rid of Jared Goff right now. Of course not. But do you want to give Jared Goff $35 million a year if it means losing Cooper Kupp and replacing him with a rookie slot receiver?
$35 million a year? Is that what the...
That's what it's going to be by the time I think he signs an extension, which is... I assume he's going to sign his extension probably in 2020. And it'll be about $35 million a year. So, yeah, would you rather have basically Jared Goff and a rookie slot receiver and a rookie left tackle or a rookie quarterback under Sean McVay, you know, who you would take in the first round with the draft pick you got from trading Jared Goff and Cooper Kupp in the slot and a veteran left tackle, whether it's Andrew Whitworth or somebody else, we'll get to in a second. But, you know, I mean, it's at least – I think the Rams very much thought, hey, Jared Goff is a star quarterback independent of this scheme, independent of the players around him. And I don't want to say he's a system quarterback. I think that's unfair. But I do think we're seeing his limitations when things are not laid out for him exactly the way they were early in this season.
That's fair. I would like to make two other notes. Mm-hmm. I think that, one, yeah, $35 million is probably right because Rep One, who's Jared Goff's agency, and the Ryan and Bruce Tolner, his agents, they're the ones who also did that Blake Bortles deal with Jacksonville. So if they can get that money from Blake Bortles, they can certainly get that money for Jared Goff. They seem to have a good beat on the quarterback market. And Goff, two, but my actual counterpoint would be if you gave, what is the outcome of that game, Bill, if you took Julian Edelman away from Tom Brady and gave Jared Goff Cooper Kupp?
Yeah, it might be enough to switch it to the Rams. I mean, that's not out of the question. It's, you know, I we're in a league now where slot receivers are very valuable. So if you are the agent of the 32-year-old Hunter Renfrow, that is very exciting news for you, and you may end up going a little higher in the draft than you expected. But I mean, man, it's just, you know, having that guy just makes things so much easier. It's going to create opportunities for you to win at the very beginning. Once you hit the third, fourth, the fifth step of your dropback, you can get that ball out to an open receiver and not have to worry about the coverage and not have to worry about getting hit, because you're going to beat, you know, your pass is going to beat all of those situations to an easy completion. And we saw, I mean, Tom Brady was bad in this game. He struggled, and especially when he had time to throw, I mean, he made a lot of mistakes. He seemed confused. He chucked the ball up to covered receivers. He threw an interception when he got confused by the coverage early in the game. Took a really bad strip sack when he held onto the ball forever. And the one thing that kept that offense going for most of this contest was Julian Edelman, who, I mean, realistically, you know, he was uncoverable. He was absolutely just a force of nature out of the slot. And the Rams, they tried to keep Tlaib to start the game. That did not work in any stretch of the imagination. They had a couple linebackers on him for different parts of the game. They had Marcus Peters traveling into the slot to try and stop him. They had Nickel Robey Coleman, their traditional slot defender, up against Edelman. None of those solutions really worked. Edelman, until the very end of the game, until the fourth quarter, I mean, it wasn't like he was the best part of the Patriots offense. He was the Patriots offense full stop. And I mean, Stephon Gilmore played well. I think he obviously, you know, gave up some catches. He had a key holding penalty on a third and long, had the interception, of course, and that was a great play. But I'm very comfortable giving this MVP award to Edelman. I thought he was the best player on the field.
For sure. And, go back and watch the first half of, I'm not telling you to do it. I'm just saying in general, people should go back and watch it. I mean, it is a route running course, like PhD course. I mean, Edelman is out there and he is, they throw in anyone you want at him. And now occasionally he got lined up with Corey Littleton, but I don't know that Corey Littleton is any worse than, or is like he might not be worse than Aqib Tlaib,
right?
Who is, and that's not knocking Tlaib. He's just, Tlaib is like, you know, I mean, he's like Richard Sherman. Like Richard Sherman, you don't want covering slot guys. I mean,
right.
Or Patrick.
It's not his skill set.
Yeah, exactly. And it was a little surprising to see that Wade Phillips think that would work. And look, Edelman, we don't have to get to the Hall of Fame thing unless that's something that you had on the rundown to talk about. But I think it is the most fascinating case we have ever seen, because Julian Edelman now, in his career, which is, you know, I mean, he's been playing at the Patriots for, you know, it'll be 10 years next season, and we presume that he'll be back. He has played in 18 playoff games, so slightly mm-hmm. more than a full football season, and he has 1,400 yards. Like, his playoff performance would be better than any regular season, like, any regular season he's ever had in his career. I mean, mm-hmm. he has a very average career, but his playoff performances, he is second all-time in receiving yards with 1,412 behind mm-hmm. only Jerry Rice, who has an ungodly 2,245. And he is second all-time in playoff receptions with 115, wow. which is 22 more than Reggie Wayne has at number three. I mean, it is – Edelman is, like, the most prototypical Boston gamer, most prototypical Boston athlete, guy who steps on the big stage maybe of all time.
I mean, I talked about this a little bit with Nick Stevens on our show before the Super Bowl, but he's like on the pantheon of like your almost like your Mount Rushmore or your top five of Patriots players from this dynasty, no?
Oh yeah, without question. So I ranked the top 41 pass catchers that Tom Brady had. And by mm-hmm. the way, on the list of all time receiving yards with the Patriots since 2001, Josh Gordon is number 26, which tells you about this list. I mean, it's incredible. Edelman, I had as the top three elite guys: one Gronk, two Randy Moss, three Wes Welker. This playoff performance by Julian Edelman, I had him at four as just in under a category of true Patriots. I think it would be unfair to everybody to not move him in there. I mean, and so if you assume that Brady, if you're doing the Mount Rushmore or whatever, and it's Brady is Mount Rushmore is four or five, I can never remember. It's four, right? Mount Rushmore four. Yes. Four. But it would be Brady and Belichick, of course. Mm-hmm. I think you could make a case to put Bob Kraft up there if mm-hmm. you're picking like the top five pantheon. And then you would have probably Gronk and Edelman. I mean, wouldn't mm-hmm. that be the faces of the Patriots that you would think about?
It feels like it, right? You know, maybe you have a case for, I don't know, like a Teddy Bruschi from the first part of this organization, or the first part of the decade, or Mike Vrabel, or
Ty Law is the first member of the 18-year, six Super Bowl winning Patriots dynasty to get into the Hall of Fame. That right. is crazy. It's nuts. These guys, they're just churning through it over and over again.
So who do you think is going to get in? It'll be Law. You would figure, I mean, Brady and Belichick, unless I cannot fathom the scandal that would keep them out of the Hall of Fame. I'm almost tempted to see what it would take.
Well, no, remember, off field, I think in theory, I'm not making light of murder, but Tom Brady could go murder someone, and based on what the Hall of Fame voters have espoused on Twitter in years past, that would not actually affect his candidacy.
It would have to be some kind of on field scandal, like some sort of, right. like the Patriots are actually using mind control, in Foxborough to win games. You know, I think Brady and Belichick will obviously get in. I think Ty Law will get in. And then you have questions, right? I mean, do you think Edelman gets in eventually? Do you think Gronk gets in to the Hall of Fame?
Oh, I think Gronk is the first ballot Hall of Famer.
Even though he's only – if he retires, he'll retire, I mean, after how many healthy seasons basically?
So he got his third Super Bowl ring mm-hmm. on Sunday night. He is the all-time leader in touchdowns for tight ends, I believe. Mm-hmm.
I don't have to imagine.
I'm like 99.9999% sure of that, but I don't have it in front of me. And we just saw Tony Gonzalez get in. I think Gronk is a first ballot lock. I don't think it'll be close. I don't think that Edelman is a. I was actually listening to the Around the NFL podcast while traveling back mm-hmm. From Atlanta, and I heard Chris Wessling, who I respect his opinion greatly, said that he thinks that Edelman, the discussion is now worthwhile having. And I know Adam Schefter, who, of course, everybody respects Adam Schefter greatly, tweeted that out. And I was really surprised that both of those guys said that. I mean, it doesn't change my opinion. I don't think Edelman is a Hall of Famer. But I think if he hangs around and Tom Brady does play till he's 45 and Edelman plays with him and he piles up more rings and has more yardage and creeps toward, like, if he catches Jerry Rice in postseason yardage, mm-hmm. I mean, what are you going to do? How are you going to keep the guy out? I think that those Belichick and Brady and Gronk are the only guys who will get in. I don't think you count really count Randy Moss as a Patriot per se because of his time there, but you know he's obviously already in. I think maybe Edelman is the only other guy who's going to get in.
Is there anybody?
Am I missing somebody obvious?
I'm thinking. I don't think Devin McCourty's a great player, but I don't think he ends up making it to the Hall of Fame. I don't think. I don't think Vrabel or Bruce Gill end up making it. Richard Seymour's will probably won't make it. The offensive linemen have been great, but I don't think any of them have been so. I don't think Logan Mankins or somebody like that is going to make it. Maybe Wes Welker.
Wes Welker's numbers do absolutely blast Edelman out of the water. But I think the problem with Welker is that he is considered, A, that he had Tom Brady there, and B, that he had Randy Moss on the other side for a long stretch. I mean, Wes Welker in his 6 years in New England averaged 112 catches, 1,200 receiving yards, and 6 touchdowns a game. It's like better than Megatron numbers. But I think that Wes Welker will be devalued a little bit because he never won a Super Bowl. It's an unfortunate reality. Maybe Joe Tooney, if he makes the Super Bowl every single year that he plays, which he has done now, by the way, he has 2 That's Super Bowl incredible. Rings in his first years. Congratulations, Joe. Maybe that could happen. I don't know. I think Shaq Mason, I guess, does too. I don't know. I think it's hard to imagine.
I guess Randy Moss, but it doesn't really count.
Yeah. I don't think Moss counts because Randy Moss is probably in the Hall of Fame based on his Vikings.
Right.
So I really think it's going to be Brady, Belichick, and Gronk as the 3 Hall of Fame guys, and then maybe Edelman and maybe Welker. I don't know if you have you heard the rumors about what the NFL might do in this coming year, in this 100 year, what the Hall of Fame might do, like a special exemption for a larger class to try to free up. Yeah, so there's buzz about that, I'm biased because I know him fairly well, but Torrey Holt should be in the Hall of Fame, in my opinion. I think Isaac Bruce should be in the Hall of Fame. Torrey Holt had more receiving yards than Jerry Rice in the first 9 years of his career. Pete Prisco has been stumping for Tony Boselli to get in and believes that he's one of the 3 or 4 best left tackles. The buzz is that the Hall of Fame knows that it has this logjam of offensive linemen and this logjam of wide receivers. It also has a group of guys like Steve Smith, Andre Johnson, Reggie Wayne, all these guys coming down the pipe who are going to get in, and it needs to clear some stuff out. So for the 100th year of the NFL, they might try and make that happen. And if they do, I think that would be interesting because I would guess, Bill, that just based on the way that numbers work, it might potentially create a spot in 3 or 4 years where there's a weaker class. Each year, they had to decide between 5 or 6 people this year. And ultimately, I think probably went with Ty Law because they wanted somebody to rep the Patriots dynasty. And, they went with Kevin Mawai, certainly deserving. But, you're going to have people, Steve Hutchinson fans, are naturally mad about it, and understandably so. Tony Boselli fans, same thing. But I think the Hall of Fame would badly like to clear out this logjam and get ready to sort of welcome a more modern era, a group of guys that are coming around.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's deserved. I think there's a lot of guys who, especially, and I know this is my hobby horse, but especially along the offensive line, so many guys who I think deserve to get in who have not gotten in. And I think,
do you think it'll be different this is 2019, let's say, do you think it'll be different in 2024, thanks to the advent of, more generalized tape study, more knowledgeable fans and analytics like Pro Football Focus and all that? Do you think we will more easily thrust offensive linemen into the hall? Look, I'll be honest. When I wrote our Hall of Fame piece, and it is difficult to write a blurb about Kevin Mawai, because I don't know who he is or know who he played for, or know that he's a good player and having watched him play. But it's my recall as a football writer because of how long I've been doing this. I'm not like, of course, Mawai stonewalled, interior defensive lineman from X game. It's hard to put into context
100%.
Why an offensive lineman is so special.
Of course, 100%. And I think there is that reality of, at the end of the day, this is a league that is built upon numbers and about players who produce statistics. And you look at the top 100 players rankings every year, and just about every single season, there are more running backs in the top 100 than there are offensive linemen. And that's voted on by the players who should know better. And so when you have a group of 50 people voting for the Hall of Fame who are writers, and how can I put this nicely? Some of them are smart and insightful, and I think everyone puts in a good faith effort, but a lot of those people, not a lot, a lot is the wrong word. Some of those people, given the opinions they express on the teams they cover on a day-to-day basis in the NFL, I can say quite confidently they're not really thinking about the Hall of Fame, with very educated thoughts. And so I just, as fantasy football becomes more and more popular and as the, you know, the generation of players who come through fantasy football have more meaning, I just don't, you know, I just don't think there's going to be anyone really vouching for these guys unless they totally change the policies or unless they totally, you know, have ways to develop better data for offensive linemen. And I, you know, with all due respect to PFF, I don't think their grades are really very helpful when it comes to using offensive linemen or judging offensive linemen. And even if they were, I mean, someone like Alan Faneca played almost his entire career before that was being tracked in a reliable way. So I would love it if that was the case, but I just don't think it's going to be, for the reasons you said, I just don't think it's going to be happening anytime soon. So I hope that if there is that sort of, you know, burst of people being added, I hope that really does end up happening.
It would actually, I just thought of
it. No, go for it.
The offensive line thing. So, like, the way that the Hall of Fame is built out now, and I think, I don't mean to invoke Pete Prisco's name one another time, but, like, Pete has had a point, like, they need to change up the way they do it. I agree completely with him. It's the current voting system is based on geography, where, you know, a beat writer, you know, several national guys and a beat writer from each of these cities, because when the Hall of Fame was, you know, in its, you know, building out and you know, before the internet and all that, you needed somebody who watched that game. I mean, there wasn't a Sunday ticket for, you couldn't watch every Bills game if you lived in California. And so it made sense to do it. Now, I don't know that that is the answer. It might almost make more sense to have, like, what if you formed a committee of writers? And I think that it would behoove the Hall of Fame to include veteran established writers. It would behoove them to include younger generation writers, and you could, you know, and to blend the two. And I'm not saying me or anything, or you, I just think that there needs to be a better blend of it to keep bias out of it, and do it by position. Like, have a wide receiver committee that works down to narrow down the wide receivers and say, like, all right, here's who we want to present, and do it by offensive linemen. You know what I mean? And so instead of having somebody from the local Jacksonville TV station stumping for Tony Boselli against, you know, whoever. You know, I don't know. I just think that the system is a little antiquated and that it leaves a lot to be desired.
All right. We're going to come back with Will Brinson talking more about the Super Bowl and the Patriots and Rams in a moment here on the Bill Barnwell Show. Back here on the Bill Barnwell Show, I'm Bill Barnwell of ESPN, still joined by CBS's Will Brinson. And Will, you know who we need? We need to hire Cable Thanos to start doing videos for offensive linemen.
Oh my God. Did you? Okay. So can I tell you a story about Radio Row?
Please.
That involves Cable Thanos and Seahawks Twitter.
Please go ahead.
I interviewed Russell Wilson, and we're doing this. We did this Pick Six podcast rundown. They gave me a live video show from 12 to 1 every day, Monday through Friday. It was very exciting. And they were like, hey, we want you to make it, like, cool and casual. It's like, hey, I'm your guy, because I'm not going to. And so, like, Russell's sitting down, and we were playing, doing some goofy stuff, and, you know, Matt, you know, just talking about the Seahawks, et cetera. And I was like, all right, what about, and Pete, oh, I'm sorry, four times. Pete Prisco apologized to Russell. He's like, I'm sorry for all the things I've said about you. I was wrong. You were great. I think you really developed. That was your best year of the season last year. Pete, you know, Russell's like, thank you very much. And I was like, man, we have to get a Cable Thanos video of, like, all of Prisco's old tweets ripping Russell, and then followed up by the apology. And so we're working on getting that information to Cable Thanos. But Russell was like, that's my guy. And it is. I think that's, like, might be the most underrated story of 2018 in the NFL, is that Russell Wilson has somehow embedded himself deep within Seahawks Twitter. And, like, he's boys with this guy, Cable Thanos, who writes for Hawk Blogger and does wild memerific motivational hype videos before Seahawks games. To me, that is so delightfully 2019.
Let me ask you a question, Will.
are you secretly Cable Thanos?
I was very similar to the question I was going to ask. Do you think Russell Wilson is secretly Cable Thanos?
Oh, my God. That would be... No, I don't. I am surprised at how quickly Russell, like...
It's suspicious.
It's very suspicious how quickly he's like, oh, Cable Thanos is my dude. That didn't make any sense. Do we know anyone, like, who else? Like, Mina Kimes is like a Seahawks Twitter. I assume that Danny Kelly, who I saw at the Super Bowl, mm-hmm. A good friend of the program, I assume, too, for
yes,
you. I mean, I love Danny Kelly. He's the best. I assume he's in Seahawks Twitter as the former head managing editor of field goals. Mm-hmm. Like, have these people had contact with Cable Thanos? Has Hawkblogger, right? Like, if he writes there, so surely somebody's sent him a 1099 or, like, had a DM with him or somebody's had a beer with him in Seattle. It can't be just a rogue Russell burner account making hype videos, right?
Here's the thing, though. You notice he had plenty of access to Seahawks footage. They never hit him with a copyright takedown. Yeah. They never, Russell was very quick to respond. He was always like, oh, you know, like we need to hang out. There was never video of them, like, maybe if there is, and this is totally dumb if there is, I apologize, but I don't think there was any, any footage of them, like, hanging out or, like, them, you know, being in separate places at the same time. And honestly, like, Russell Wilson is in the film room for most of the day, you figure. Would it be that shocking if, like, at night, if he was bored, that, you know, maybe to take a little break from grinding tape, from taking care of a child, maybe he, you know, just happens to learn, I don't know what, I was going to say Photoshop, but it's video, so, Adobe Premiere, I guess, I don't know, like, is it that crazy to think that Russell Wilson might, use this as a pretense for possibly trolling people who don't like the Seahawks?
What about another theory that actually dovetails with your theory, but could potentially make even more sense? So,
really?
Our friend Charlotte Wilder was hot on the Tom Brady Times, right, TV Times.
Very true.
What if Cable Thanos is not Russell Wilson, but is actually Russell Wilson's version of Tom Brady's social media team?
Oh.
Where Russell has decided, I'm going to run my own Twitter account like I do, Danger Russ Wilson, just tweet out pictures of children's hospitals and Ciara and khakis and Pete Carroll and stuff like that. And instead, I'm going to have you guys, the social media team, create this, like, burner account, Cable Thanos, and you create the hype videos and you interact with Seahawks, just get deep in Seahawks Twitter, but we won't tell anybody who you are, and I'll retweet your stuff, and it'll get built up. What about that theory?
It's not out of the question. I have another idea. And then I think we're going to finish up, get back hopefully to the Super Bowl and finish up. Might tell you how exciting this game was. What if Cable Thanos is Pete Briscoe? And this is his way of getting back in Russell Wilson's good graces.
I haven't slept and I'm delirious. So that's the funniest thing I've ever heard. What if I hadn't spent the week watching Pete Briscoe try to finagle technology, I might agree with you, but that
it's all a ruse.
It's all a giant. What if Pete Briscoe is a Russell Wilson burner account? Oh my god, I fall
out of the question. All right, well, let's get back to the Super Bowl and the Rams Patriots discussion in a second here. But first, let's talk about Dollar Shave Club because, guys, I just moved from New York to Washington. And I got to admit, I threw a lot of things out, a lot of things I had in my old apartment I didn't want to bring with me to D.C. Just didn't need them, figured I'd get a replacement for them in D.C. The things I kept, honestly, more than anything else, were the stuff that was in the bathroom from Dollar Shave Club because I want that stuff. I don't want to lose that stuff. I don't want to have to go to the store and get replacements. I want to hold on to things that are really valuable to me, things I use every single day, whether it's something for my skin, something for my face, something for my mouth, whether it's toothbrush and toothpaste. Dollar Shave Club has awesome stuff with that, whether it's, stuff for the shower, stuff to keep me smelling great so I don't get sent back to New York. I am using Dollar Shave Club products every single day. And best part is, now that I updated my address, well, they're going to keep sending me stuff with their program that automatically keeps me stocked on things I'm using. So whatever I want from their collection, and no matter how frequently I want it, whether it's once a month or once every 6 months, Dollar Shave Club's going to send it to me. I mentioned the toothpaste. I'm someone who, I have to brush my teeth twice a day or my teeth are going to look gross. I don't want that. I want my teeth to look not gross. And Dollar Shave Club makes sure that is not the case because I always have toothpaste. I'm never running out. I'm never frantically running this to the store with bad breath, worried that I'm going to offend some passerby. I fortunately have decent teeth. I was going to say decent teeth. That sounded kind of gross, but I just said it. So there you go. And with their handsome discount at Dollar Shave Club, the more you buy, the more you save. And right now, they've got a bunch of starter sets you can try for just $5, like their Oral Care Kit, which includes the toothpaste I just mentioned. And after that, the restock box ships regularly sized products at regular price. So what are you waiting for? Get your starter set for just $5 right now at dollarshaveclub.com/Barnwell. That's dollarshaveclub.com/Barnwell. Now back to the show. Let's finish up discussing this game here in terms of Patriots and Rams. Obviously, we talked about the Rams and sort of their future, and sort of, you know, how we see things might be changing for them. They have a bunch of free agents, of course, coming up. Ndamukong Suh is a free agent. Dante Fowler is a free agent. LaMarcus Joyner is a free agent. And then along the offensive line, you have Roger Saffold, who's going to be a free agent, and Andrew Whitworth is considering, at the very least, retiring. You figure if they won, he probably would have had a better case for retiring. Might come back now, hard to say, but obviously, you know, the Rams are a team that was built, you know, to win over the next couple of years, but certainly a lot of players who are in position to win this year who might not be back. I mean, do you think they take a step backwards because they struggled to replace those guys, or is it just going to be, you know, that they're going to, you know, just sign the next guy in a one-year deal who happens to fall in their hands and becomes the next Ndamukong Suh?
I think that's a fantastic question, and it will be really interesting to see how Les Snead, who has been very aggressive the last two off seasons, sort of got to do his own thing separate of what, you know, working with Jeff Fisher and sort of, you know, playing with Sean McVay, who has been, you know, I think more willing to, like, you know, sort of let Les Snead do Les Snead, but also to say, hey, look, let's go all in, you know, understanding the nuances and the importance of the modern era salary cap situation and how you have a small window with a quarterback on a rookie wage scale. Mm-hmm. That being said, yeah, I think I could easily see them taking a step back. I mean, Cooper Kupp is going to come back from a rough injury, and he's not necessarily going to be entirely healthy. You know, that defense, I am not saying this in any way to criticize Wade Phillips, but you always see a huge spike in Wade Phillips' first and second year, and then maybe sometimes they level off a bit, you know, personnel. It's probably because the defense is so good that guys leave and get paid, honestly.
Right, of course.
If anything else. And, you know, they have a lot of guys to worry about from a contractual standpoint. You know, they have an issue with edge rush. You know, Dante Fowler came in and was a big help. I don't know if they can give him maybe the contract that he wants. Ndamukong Suh will probably be looking for a big contract as well. And so if they lose that pressure on the front, I mean, they still have Aaron Donald, but, you know, the Patriots showed you can at least mitigate the damage that he can do to a degree at various stretches. The linebacking group is a smaller, you know, more modern group, and I don't know that it can be exploited a little bit. I think the defense will be good. But I do think that even if Jared Goff has another monster season and Todd Gurley bounces back, that, yeah, given the division, given that Jimmy Garoppolo is coming back from an injury, that the 49ers have shown that they'll be aggressive. They have tons of cap space. The Seahawks look like they have quickly reloaded and retooled that team and are going to be a problem in that division. And I can't imagine that the Arizona Cardinals can't be worse. So, yeah, I think it's possible that the Rams could potentially take a step back. I think there'll be a, you know, it's nuts, Bill, but before this season, 2018, you could bet on the Rams to win the NFC West at -160, wow, which was the best value out there. And I didn't pounce on it, but more people should have. And I think that the Rams will probably be like -330 or something like that this year. And I wouldn't be surprised if the Seahawks or 49ers jumped up and really surprised them, you know, stunned them and won the division, or the Rams took a step back. I think that's viable. Still think they're a playoff contender and they'll make plenty of noise. But yeah, I mean, you know, they shoved in for this window, and now they have to figure out if they still have the ammunition to keep, you know, being aggressive in 2019.
Yeah. Where do you think Ndamukong Suh lines up week one of 2019?
Oh, goodness gracious.
Can I throw a theory out there?
If you have an idea, throw it out, because I'm just guessing.
I have a guess, just to use someone from Portland, Oregon. The closest team to Portland, Oregon is the Seattle Seahawks, who have more cap space this upcoming offseason. They are moving on from Earl Thomas, you would presume, and they have a good defensive line, certainly, but can always get better and can certainly rotate extra guys in there. I don't think Sue would be the worst fit there in terms of, you know, if he ends up getting a 2 or 3 year deal. I think it could make sense for both parties to add Ndamukong Suh to the defensive line.
I like that idea. It would make sense, and that's something that John Schneider and Pete Carroll certainly have been willing to do. Is to now, I don't think they'll want to be involved in giving him some sort of record breaking deal.
No,
I think
of course
for
not.
Sue, I think for Sue, like it a lot comes down to, I think location will matter for him. The Portland point is a great one, and I think that he will ultimately want to, like, Sue is very brand conscious. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, he's always wanted to, you know, he wanted Miami because it was a spot where he could be LA, same thing. And so if he feels that the advantages of being in Seattle can help benefit his interest outside of football, then I think he would definitely be interested in that.
So where do you think he'll go?
Let's see. He's not going to go to Detroit. He won't go to Miami.
We can narrow it down. We can start going against his dad. Has he played there before?
Go to the Patriots.
The Patriots are a really fascinating one because I think Belichick would love to have him if the money's right. But they have, I mean, a bunch of work to do. And actually, need to talk about them as well. I'm not going to let you off the hook. I need a Sue pick from you, but then let's talk about the Patriots and finish up.
Okay. I will say that Ndamukong Suh goes. Oh, sorry, I'm filibustering. I don't have a great answer for. I'll say he goes to the Atlanta Falcons.
Atlanta Falcons. I like that one. That makes sense. Okay. I mean,
they're yelling at me. They're like, we don't need interior rush in the draft. I'm like, you don't know what you have. Your defense has been terrible. He would be great to help Dan Quinn stop the run. Mm-hmm. He would be a perfect fit in terms of, you know, being able to slide into that Seattle type of defense. And I think, you know, he just played at the Mercedes-Benz Stadium. He understands that there's some nice branding that goes on there, and it could be a team that could make a run.
That's entirely out of the question. And the Patriots side of things, I mean, they are in a bit of a fascinating situation because we don't know if Rob Gronkowski is going to retire. Their wide receiving core is going to be overhauled, especially over the next 2 years. We think Edelman is a safe free agent after the 2019 season. Chris Hogan, Cordarrelle Patterson. Who else am I forgetting here? Philip Dorsett.
Philip Dorsett. By the way, yeah. Shout out to Dan Shonka and our lads. Because it is super helpful when you go to their depth charts and all the likely free agents, all the current free agents are listed in bright red.
Yes, a site I use every single day when it comes to breaking down the NFL. But all those guys are free agents. So it's really just Edelman right now. Edelman and Dwayne Allen, who might get cut because he has a big salary. And then, you know, Braxton Berrios out of Miami, who was on injured reserve all year. But, like, I mean, they're going to have to really overhaul that receiving core. And then, you know, Tom Brady is probably going to get an extension. He's entering the final year of his deal, has a pretty onerous cap hit. I think it's over $27 million or at $27 million. And then Trey Flowers is a free agent. Trent Brown, who was awesome at left tackle, is a free agent. I mean, there's a lot of work to do for the Patriots this offseason. I don't know. You know, it's going to be fascinating to see what this team looks like week one of 2019.
And did I miss it? I was like looking at our lads, but did you mention Gronk? Because we don't know what is going to happen with Gronk.
Yeah. I mean, we have no idea. And I think he's going to retire, but I could, you know, very easily be wrong.
Well, he has a cap hit of $11.859 million and dead cap space of $2 million. So to me, one of two things happens in regards, at least to that cap hit, is the Patriots will either cut him or he will retire. Now, it is possible. I don't know if you saw the Instagram video that Tom Brady posted, like, you know, guess who's back, and then to be continued, .. Mm-hmm. I mean, again, like, maybe Cable Thanos is Tom Brady's social media guy. I could see Tom Brady saying, and I think you're right, I think he'll get an extension just to, you know, add a year onto that, but I could see Tom Brady saying, hey, I would like Gronk back for one more year. Gronk, go figure out something with Bill. Bill, go figure out something with Gronk. Look at what happened in the playoffs. I know Gronk wasn't himself during the regular season, but he grinded it out through the entire regular season, and then he made a huge difference in the final games down the stretch. They don't win the Super Bowl, I don't think, without Gronk making two massive plays.
Yep.
There's already chatter on Monday morning that the catch against the Rams is the biggest play of Gronk's career, and it is notable. Like, you keep the car in the garage, you know, through the fall, and then bust it out in the winter when it's go time. I mean, I don't think that's a formula the Patriots will stray from in 2019 if they have a 42-year-old quarterback and an aging tight end, because they just proved that it works, and they proved that it's worked, you know, multiple times over the last few years. The Bills, Jets, and Dolphins are still a ways away mm-hmm. from making real waves in that division, I think. And as a result, I think the Patriots know they have a window, and Gronk would make sense in that perspective if they can find a number that works for both the big tight end and Mr. Belichick.
I mean, even if it's the same number in the final year of his deal, even if he said, hey, I'm going to spend training camp, you know, resting in a pool of Tide Pods, and I'm not going to practice, I'm not going to go through preseason, I'm going to sit out all our divisional games, any game against a team where we're favored by more than a touchdown, I'm chilling, and then I'll play the other games in the regular season, and I'll play in the postseason for $10 million. I wouldn't fault Bill Belichick for taking that offer if the alternative is Gronk retiring.
I'm with you, because one of the other things that goes a little bit unsaid, I mean, we talked about it leading up to the Super Bowl, but if the Patriots want to be a power run team, and that was their identity, and it's not unreasonable to think, you know, Trent Brown is a free agent, mm-hmm. and Adrian Waddell is a free agent, of course, but they have the meat and bones of this offensive line in Tooney, right. David Andrews, Shaq Mason, and Marcus Cannon. If they want to, and they could re-sign Trent Brown, if they want to be a power run team, I really think that as good as that offensive line is, they also need to have Gronk there as a guy who can step in and be a sixth offensive lineman against stout front sevens, and someone who can, you know, create matchup issues when he lines up, blocks, and then takes off on a seam route.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. They're going to get Isaiah Wynn back from Georgia, who missed all of his rookie season with a torn Achilles. But you know what? You still need Gronk. There's no replacing Gronk, and I think, you know, I think if they lose Gronk, if Gronk retires, they can't be the same team. That something's going to change. And they've done it in the past. You know, when they traded Randy Moss and Welker aged, it was, okay, now we're going to be the two tight end team with Rob Gronkowski and Aaron Hernandez. And, you know, they'll be another act. They're the Patriots. They figured this stuff out, and they're already ahead of the curve in a way that we're not expecting. But you would figure that they're going to, you know, that they're going to have to shift something, because you can't replace Gronk. You know, I'm going to suggest, I think, when I write my five moves column for the Patriots, they go out and sign Tyler Eifert, who, you know, is kind of a, you know, when he's healthy, is a baby Gronk, and we all, of course, know he's not healthy almost ever, but, I mean, you would figure going out and getting an athletic tight end would make sense, but even if you get an athletic tight end, you're not getting Gronk, you're not getting a guy who's that good as a blocker and that threatening as a receiver. So, I mean, you can't be the same. Something has to change, because, you know, the threat of Gronkowski changes the way teams defend the Patriots front to back and on every single down. So he's such an incredibly impactful player that I think any chance of having him back for meaningful games in 2019, I think the Patriots pretty much have to bend over backwards and sort of contort themselves into a, you know, a cap situation that would make sense to bring Gronk back.
Yeah, I have no problem with that. I mean, look, he had 682 receiving yards in 13 games, 11 starts per PFR, although I can't imagine Gronk didn't start a game that he played in. That seems weird. Whatever. You know, this is by far his worst. It's just wasn't a fully healthy season, but he's alternated those, you know, in the past. I mean, I wonder how much he really wants to go out there and be banged up on a week-to-week basis and just grind through the season and listen to another year of retirement talk. I also think that Tom Brady's in his ear going, look, dude, I got 6 rings. You got 3. I want to, we don't need to take down the Steelers franchise. Let's go take down Michael Jordan. Come with me. Let's go win another title. It's the best feeling in the world. This is a fun team. We have literally nothing to lose. You know, Seth Wickersham wrote that article about us, and since then we've been to 3 Super Bowls. No, I'm just kidding. It is hilarious that they've been to every Super Bowl since that article. And I don't know. I just feel like I feel like Brady could talk Gronk into one more ride. Does that mean, you know, maybe?
I'm just picturing Gronk on like one of those like scooters that we saw all around Atlanta Super Bowl week.
You did ride a
one more ride.
I
rode one.
I rode them all week. They were awesome. I was I ran into Nora Prinsati of the Boston Globe, mm-hmm. While I was riding a bird scooter to the Atlanta Breakfast Club while wearing a blazer and a backpack. I looked like the biggest doofus in the entire world.
Incredibly dignified. Will Brinson of CBS. Will, it's always a pleasure. We'll have you back on in March, I'm sure, probably talking some free agency. But until then, you're going to get a well-deserved break, I hope. But where can people check out all the stuff you did during Super Bowl, and where can they check out the stuff you're going to do in the month to come?
Yeah, CBSSports.com, of course. I have several columns up there. They can, I'm sure I've tweeted them out, at Will Brinson. And even though the season is over, Bill, my podcast will never stop. It will be daily, continuing on.
That's incredible.
It's incredibly stupid. That's right. The Pick Six podcast on iTunes, and people can also watch me on CBS Sports HQ, which is our streaming 24/7 live network that is free. And you can just go to the CBS Sports HQ app and check that out.
All right, Will, thank you so much.
Thanks, buddy. Talk to you in March.
All right, thanks so much to CBS's Will Brinson. Just an update for you guys. We are in the off season. It's officially here. So we're going to be scaling our schedule back. Will's doing 5 shows a week. Will is a lunatic, I think is the word I'm thinking of. We're going to be doing 1 show a week. Maybe have a couple of 2 show weeks if news breaks and something important discusses. But otherwise, 1 show a week over the next few months as we approach the 2019 NFL season, which is 6.5, 7 months away. Plenty of football to come in the fall, but we'll do mostly NFL, I think, during the offseason. Maybe some stuff here and there that's not football, but really appreciate you guys listening during the NFL season. Just so psyched to do the podcast and so psyched to, talk to smart, funny people. And hopefully you guys enjoyed it, and more audio coming in the weeks to come.